Susan's eyebrows rose.
What about your amulet?
I shook my head. The light from that is actually... it's more complicated than you need to know. Suffice it to say that I feel there would be a very, very small chance that it might make the atmosphere explode, like those static electricity warnings at the gas stations. Why take the chance?
Susan said, you want us to walk blind through a tunnel filled with poisonous gases that could explode at the smallest spark?
Yeah.
And you're sure this is a good idea?
It's a terrible idea, I said.
But it's the fastest way to the storage facility.
I lifted my fingertips to touch the red stone on my amulet as I neared the location of the way. It was an old, bricked-over doorway into the ground level of the apartment building. A voice with no apparent source began to speak quietly, a woman's voice, throaty and calm. My mother's voice. She died shortly after my birth, but I was certain, as sure as I had been of anything in my life, it was her voice. It made me feel warm, listening to it, like an old, favorite piece of music that you haven't heard for years.
The hallway on the other side is full of dangerous levels of methane and carbon monoxide, among other gases. The mixture appears to be volatile, and in the other side you can never be sure exactly which energies might or might not trigger an explosion. 42 walking steps to the far end, which opens on a ridge outside Corwin, Nevada.
There was a moment of silence, and then the same voice began to speak again, panting, shaking, out of breath.
Notation. The hallway is not entirely abandoned. Something tried to grab me as I came through.
She coughed several times.
Notation secundus. Don't wear a dress next time you need to go to Corwin, dummy. Some farmer's going to get a show.
Maybe it was a grue, I murmured, smiling.
What did you say?
Susan asked.
Nothing, I said. Never mind.
I put a hand on the doorway and immediately felt a kind of yielding elasticity beneath my fingertips. The separation between the world of flesh and spirit was weak here. I took a deep breath, laid out a fairly mild effort of will, and murmured, Aperturam. A circle of blackness began to expand from the center of my palm beneath my hand, rapidly swelling, overlaying the wall itself. I didn't let it get too big. The gate would close on its own, eventually, but smaller gates closed more quickly, and I didn't want some poor fool going through it. Present company excluded, of course. I glanced back to Susan and Martin.
Susan, grab onto my coat. Martin, you grab hers. Take a deep breath, and let's get this done fast and quiet.
I turned to the way, took a deep breath, and then strode forward. Mom's gem hadn't mentioned that it was flipping hot in there. When I'd stepped into the hallway on the first trip, I felt like I was inside about three saunas, nested together like those Russian dolls. I found the right-hand wall and started walking, counting my steps. I made them a bit shorter than normal and nailed the length of Mom's stride more accurately this time. I hit the way out at 43. Another effort of will and a whispered word, and I opened that gate as well, emerging into open air, a cold mountain wind, and late twilight. Susan and Martin came out with me, and we all spent a moment letting out our pent-up breaths. We were in desert mountains, covered with tough, stringy plants and quick, quiet beasts. The gate behind me, another circle, stood in the air in front of what looked like the entrance to an old mine that had been bricked over a long time ago.
Which way? Martin said.
Half mile this way, I said, and set out over land. It was an awfully good hidey hole, I had to admit. We were out so far in the desert hills that the commute to nowhere was a long one. The facilities had been cut into a granite shelf at the end of a box canyon. There was a single road in, and the floor of the canyon was wide and flat and empty of any significant features, like friendly rocks that one might try to take cover behind. The walls of the canyon had been blasted sheer. No one was coming down that way without 100 yards of rope or a helicopter. Or a wizard. All right, I said. The night was growing cold. My breath steamed in the air as I spoke. Take these. Drink half of them. Save the rest. I passed out test tubes filled with light blue liquid to Martin and Susan.
What is it? Susan asked.
A parachute, I said. Technically a flight potion, but I watered it down. It should get us to the valley floor safely. Martin eyed his tube, and then me.
Harry, Susan began, the last time I drank one of your potions, it became awkward.
I rolled my eyes, dropping to a roll at the end. Then I drank away half of my potion and stepped off the edge of the cliff.
Flight is a difficult thing for a wizard to manage. Everyone's magic works a little differently, and that means that when it comes to flying, the only way to manage it is by trial and error. And since flying generally means moving very quickly, a long way above the ground, would-be aeromancers tended to cut their careers and lives short at the first error. Flying is hard, but falling is easy. I dropped down, accelerating for a second, then maintaining a pace of somewhere around 15 miles an hour. It didn't take long to hit the desert floor, and I dropped into a roll to spread out the impact energy. I stood up, dusting myself off. Susan and Martin landed nearby and also rose.
Nice, Susan said.
She bounced up in the air experimentally and smiled when her descent was slowed.
Very cool. Then we drink more to climb out?
Should make that slope a piece of cake, I said. But it had better be a fast one. Potion will last us maybe 20 minutes. Susan nodded, adjusting the straps on the small pack she wore.
Got it.
Get close to me, I said. I can't veil all three of us unless we're all within arm's reach. They did, and after a few seconds of focus and concentration, I brought up a veil around us that should hide us from view and disperse our heat signature as well. It wouldn't be perfect. We'd still show up on a night vision scope to one degree or another. I was counting on the fact that men guarding a building that isolated could not possibly deal with problems on a regular basis. They'd have a very comfortable, reliable routine, which was exactly the sort of thing to take the edge off a sentry's wariness. That's just human nature. I beckoned, and the three of us began approaching the facility. There was no fluttering from shadow to shadow or camouflage face paint. The veiling spell took care of that. We just walked over the uneven ground and focused on staying close together. That part may have been more fun if Martin weren't there. We got to within 30 yards of the fence, and I paused. I lifted my staff, pointed it at the first sentry camera, and whispered, "Hexus!"